This is Daniel Fajella, head of research at Emerge Artificial Intelligence Research. You're listening to the AI Consulting Podcast, the home for AI consultants, strategists, and advisors. If you're looking to start or grow an AI consulting firm or deliver more AI value to your clients, you found yourself in the right place. In this episode, we're going to be talking about some of the lessons for the transition to AI that we can learn from the transition to big data. Our guest this week is an Emerge Plus member and also someone who I've been chatting with for the last year or so, ever since she's followed our work here at Emerge, and that is Zina Ugrinsky. She's the CTO and co-founder at Pilot Wave Holdings. She's previously held positions as partner at KPMG and Booz Allen Hamilton, focused on analytics, cloud, and strategy. And so she's seen the wave of big data hit close to a decade ago, and how service companies evolved, and how their customers evolved, and how eventually they met in the middle, and the service companies leveled up and were able to really add value in terms of the big data space to their customers. And she talks about how she's seeing similar dynamics happen in AI, how service providers need to evolve, how their clients need to evolve, and how they need to meet in the middle. I think it's great to be able to learn from past transitions, and a lot of what Zina is articulating in terms of what happened in the big data era is essentially identical to what we're seeing happen in the era of AI. So I think some of her lessons are really worth tuning into and quite transferable to the transitions that we have ahead. So whether you're on the enterprise side and you need to adopt, or whether you are a services firm that's aiming to find a place to add value to some of the enterprises that are now moving and shaking and at least thinking about artificial intelligence, this should be a useful episode. I consider us very fortunate here at Emerge to have talented members like Zina in our Emerge Plus community. If you're interested in learning more about AI frameworks for return on investment, strategy, and AI adoption, then you can check out Emerge Plus as well. And we now have a private Slack community for our Plus members. These are AI service providers, strategists, and advisors around the world, some of whom are operating within large enterprises, some of whom run their own companies, but they all have one thing in mind. They're aiming to actually get the business value from artificial intelligence by focusing on picking the right projects, aligning them with strategies, and being able to set up projects for success. And that involves being able to communicate value and ROI in a better way. And that's really what Emerge Plus is focused on. So if you want to join the community and chat with other smart folks, including a great many entrepreneurs that follow us here at Emerge. And if you want to be able to support the show, then be sure to check out Emerge Plus. It's emerj.com/P1. That's P as in plus, and then the number one, emerj.com/P1. Without further ado, this is Zina Ugrinsky with Pilot Wave here on the AI Consulting Podcast. So, Zina, you and I have been in touch for nearly a year now. It's fun to finally have a great excuse to have you on one of our podcasts here at Emerge. And we're now in this space where all the services firms in the world are seeing AI and data more and more on the mind of their customer. And it's time to think about what can we actually offer. Clearly, there's going to be dollars thrown around, but there's also value to give to our customer. You saw this wave with big data 10 or 11 years back. What did it look like then? How is it similar to what you're now seeing with AI?
Oh boy, Dan, that's a big question.
It sure is.
So what I'd like to do is try and contextualize it first in the journey that the market was going through as we were trying to sell professional services around applied data science. And then I'd like to take that same journey through the lens of the professional services company and perhaps share some of the lessons learned, you know, some of the mistakes
the
we made.
The horror stories. Yeah, exactly. That's what we want to try to avoid, right? I think you've seen this happen. I think a lot of people, myself included, of course, Zina, 11 years ago, I was doing jujitsu. I wasn't doing tech. And many people, they have not been consultants back in those days. So those transferable lessons are going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, walk through the paradigm you want us to understand first. I think that's a good place to start.
So from a customer perspective, as data science became a thing, as big data first became a discussion point, to me, it was always the natural continuation of a business person's use of technology. So this is merely the next phase of tools that we have at our disposal to optimize our enterprises. Okay? So this is from the customer viewpoint. And if you think back in 2010, what were we trying to do? Or what was a customer base trying to do? Well, they were First of all, they were trying to understand what big data was. Is it three Vs? Is it six Vs? Like, how many Vs are there, right? And what happened was that conversation happened for about 2 years, and with people struggling. There were no common definitions. There was no clear taxonomy of, in this sort of a case, who does what? What kind of people do we need? We went from what is big data to 2 years later in 2012, what were the questions I was answering? How many data scientists do I need? And the answer to that was zero until you can tell me exactly what they're going to be doing.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, two short years later, people had started realizing the urgency of what was happening because they fit into one of three categories. One, they were already data architected, so extremely data rich, or they had grown up in
More digitally native or whatever. Yeah.
Just, yeah, like the Yahoos, et cetera, Netflix, for example. And then the middle group was rich with data and starting to think about how do I turn myself into a data company from, like, in the case of the Sleep Number bed, from a mattress provider. And then the third group was, if I don't get this right, I will not be around in 5 years.
They're the farthest behind the eight ball, at risk of going the way of the dinosaurs.
Exactly.
That kind of thing. Okay.
So everyone's trying to figure out what to do. Well, what is the first thing they did in the 2014 timeframe? They went out and hired a chief data science officer, or they did it more at the division level, right? Chief analytics officer. And the C-suite walks away and they think, great, we've got someone who knows what to do.
The expert is in place, all handled.
That's right. We can breathe easy.
Yeah.
What happened was you saw, in particular, the financial services industry, banks, for example, started building out groups of hundreds of data scientists under people like this. And what happened was they were short term because where were they coming from? They were academics, for the most part, PhDs in data science that were being hired without the real business context. And we've since seen a contraction of those teams. You know, if you speak to some of the executive recruiters in that space, they'll tell you there was this massive expansion and then a contraction. We also saw that with companies like IBM, for example.
What do you mean? What do you, in terms of hiring data scientists?
Hiring to this capability and then contracting.
Okay, got it. And this is we're talking 2013, 2014 time horizon, or what?
Exactly.
Okay, got it.
And between 2014 and 2016, there was a growing realization that you can't just hire a bunch of data scientists, hire a chief data science officer, and this actually has to be a much more enterprise and holistic approach.
Yep.
And I think that's where the market now is. Okay? Now, challenges, the lagging piece of that is always, you know, now how do we productionize it? Well, what is it? So some of the themes that are now permeating executive consciousness, let's call it, and leadership in our customer bases, is it must be led with a business ideal. We need a business, a strategic problem or a strategic opportunity that we're addressing.
Yep.
The second is we're going to proof of concept at first. Everybody's done that. The challenge, as you know, is that not many of those make it into production.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Right?
And so there's a gap there, a knowledge gap that needs to be addressed. And so what I'll do is I'll sort of pause there and I'll pivot to professional services unless you have any questions.
No, got it. Okay, cool. So just to tee it up, yeah, you're talking about, hey, when the big data wave hit, when we're looking at our customers, here's what they're going through. And obviously what you're going to swivel into, which I'd love to just roll right into, frankly, is, and then with us, you know, you were at a couple very, very big services firms, you know, big global companies at the time. You know, you're asking, well, how do we deliver value to these clients? And also, how do we help grow ourselves? So this is the next tech wave. How are we going to take advantage of this? And again, you probably saw a similar transition in different ways. So yeah, lay it on us. What was the vantage point from being a services leader, seeing this new wave hit?
So I'll use the exact same timeline. So in 2010, we're talking about big data and we're trying to figure out this is clearly going to become something that will become a revenue stream.
Yep.
Okay. So is it a revenue stream that will be industry led? Is it a revenue stream that will be competency led? This is always the tension that occurs in professional services.
Industry versus competency led. Can you explain those terms? Because actually that's new to me lingo wise.
Just like any other fashion, theoretical business principles tend to evolve.
Yes.
And they also tend to, like a pendulum, swing back and forth. So I'll give you one example. On the one hand, you have a professional services organization that focuses their business development and customer care on industry groups. So you've got an oil and gas group, and you've got a healthcare group,
yeah,
and you've got a financial services group, right? Yeah. And then you have cross-cutting competency groups that serve all of those, kind of a shared service across those.
Okay, yeah. What's a good example of one of those that isn't AI, like outside?
You may have an ERP group that goes across all of those. You may have an analytics group or analytics and BI group that goes across.
This is how the bigger services firms are structured. It's like, hey, we've got industry and then we've got horizontal. So vertical or horizontal, is that a wrong way to think about it?
It's absolutely correct.
Okay,
and
great.
There's the competing theory that it should start with the competencies, and then you embed in those competencies. You would have a huge analytics group, and it would have some healthcare practitioners, some oil and gas, some financial services, and they would work together with, say, the audit function, right, to bring all of the industry capability. The challenge has been that has not worked very well when you try to think about building new competencies like applied data science and try to I'm just going to embed it in one of those two things. I'll embed it in the industry groups, I'll embed it in competency cross groups. So that is kind of the thinking that we were going through. And some of the stories that I'm going to relay, some of them are from my personal experience. Some of them are from observing them in sister organizations.
Yep.
We went out and bought a data science shop, 2012. Right?
So we're like,
and
all right, acquisition. Let's get the talent. Let's infuse
That's
it.
Right.
Let's grab them. Yeah.
Let's acquire the talent. And now as a professional services organization, how do you go to market? Well, you're going to take your customer-facing individuals. You're going to line them up with one of these shiny new people that you have just acquired. And you're going to send them out to sell.
Yeah. Hey, we can sell to you just like before, except now I got Steve, and Steve knows how to do this big data thing that you've been reading about on Forbes.com.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, perhaps they've even done some formal sales training on the topic, et cetera. So at least there's a cogent conversation that can occur. But for the most part, what you did was, 2 years later, you broke those acquisitions. Why? Because you were taking data scientists or data practitioners who were then assigned to go out and basically beat the pavement with BD people and speak to people who had no context. Now, in the worst possible case, you have salespeople who expect they can just walk someone like a data scientist in, and then the data scientist will do the selling.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like you could be a great salesperson and have that presumption, but I don't know, maybe it happens.
The second thing that then happened was that all of the data scientists that you just bought 2 years ago have now scattered to the winds because they went from belonging to an organization where they were actively working on business problems to suddenly being relegated to a pre-sales role.
Okay. And the pre-sales role is, the guy, I use the name Steve for arbitrary people sometimes. I don't know why I'm not picking on people named Steve, but so like, all right, hey, Steve, I know you got this fancy data science skill set. You're going to be in here kind of talking about what this stuff can do. with these customers, and that's most of your value, is you're just going to kind of, you're going to help open the door of conversation and sort of find what projects we could sell. Is that what you mean by pre-sales?
That is exactly
okay.
What I mean by pre-sales. Great. The challenge was, if you recall where our customers were at that time, they were busy trying to build their own competency, right? Well, I'll just hire a bunch of data scientists and do it myself. In fact, I, on many occasions, would visit customers who said, hey, thanks, but we have Bob.
Yep, right? Yep.
We've got Bob. We've joined this consortium of other companies who are our peer group in this industry. And hey, we've got this.
Yep, this is solved.
And all I did was say, may I call on you in 3 months and just let's have a conversation about how things are going. 3 months later, the answer was, it's going. I mean, we don't have anything yet, and we've not really baked a strategy yet, but we're learning. Great. May I see you in 3 months? Sure. Come back in 3 months. They're like, yeah, it's really not going all that well, but we're hopeful, and we're getting the business involved now. Now, the first thing I think of when I hear that is, now?
Yeah. Six or 9 months later.
So you're telling me you just hired a data scientist and put him in IT.
Yeah. And is this the 2013 time horizon, 2014 time horizon?
Exactly.
Okay. Got it.
Exactly.
Super similar to what we're seeing in AI now in so many ways. But I don't want to interrupt your flow. So keep going. I'm following you.
Okay. So a couple of short years later, so 2016, while clients were realizing you can't just add an executive and a bunch of data scientists and think you've covered that problem off and you're now going to crush the market, right? At the same time, professional services started realizing that, first of all, how is the customer buying at this point? They're kicking tires. They want education. They are not investing $5, $10 million in specific projects. They're doing POCs.
Yep, that's exactly.
And in some cases, not even paid POCs. So but just note to self, never do an unpaid POC. All right. So at the same time, professional services is now trying to figure out, how do we build the competency that we need in order to go bring the customer base what it needs and do that while they are starting to realize they can't do it on their own? And then, how do you sell AI? Like, what is it?
Yeah, well, you're asking the same question for data science. Like, what is data science? What does this enable? How do we communicate value?
That's right. And there are very specific similarities to what was going on in analytics. If you think about multidimensional analytics, right? Tools like TM1, SBase, et cetera, which were the first tools that business analysts had in order to have a conversation with massive amounts of data. Perhaps not massive amounts as we're thinking about it now.
Yeah. But 2016
certainly at that time, it was, we're talking from 2000 to 2010. Multidimensional analytics was the big data revolution, version one. What it did was it prepared business analysts for the kind of intellectual curiosity about their own data that fuels the ability to make that leap to, how do I now apply data science to it?
Yep.
2018, as the market is starting to recognize, customers are now recognizing that they need help, that just hiring these people doesn't fix things, and also beginning to recognize that it is a leadership first issue.
So you're continuing to touch in with the clients. Initially, it's disconnected even from business. Then maybe they pull in business, but you're saying there's this other wave where now they're realizing in this big data transition, they need leadership buy-in to make this change happen.
That's right. Not inconsequentially because of the budget required.
Oh, yeah.
For example, to get it right. the kind of infrastructure that you have to start putting in place. I mean, data lake, you know, real scalable data lake infrastructure is not inexpensive. So in 2018, the professional services organizations began to get smarter about it. They were selling, but they were selling small deals for the most part. Okay, more proof of concepts. I'll give you one example. Actually, I'll save this example for shortly after, but there were few whales, what we would call in sales parlance.
Yep.
Okay, the big deals, not too many of them happening. And so where are we today? Well, deals are starting to materialize.
Are we talking about AI now, just so I'm following you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So deals are starting to materialize, and they're starting to materialize because the solution provider, and by that I mean the software industry, has begun building out solutions for specific problems or generic solutions where there is an ontology that can be applied to a given problem, and then they sell that all the way down the street. Very similar to the way we do it in professional services, right?
Huh, interesting. Yeah, can you tie that analogy together? You know, like that tied to professional services with AI?
Sure. So the software industry has done a really good job of marketing the fact that, hey, you don't have to be a data scientist anymore. We're going to give you this application, and you can press a button and all the data science will be delivered to you, and you don't have to worry about where the data is anymore. Like, that is the nirvana that they're espousing in the market.
Yeah,
right? That is
yeah.
What I mean, if you look at the market, I call it marketecture. That's essentially what the messaging is.
Yeah, it's you hear us beat those messages down pretty hard on the podcast, but yes, mm-hmm. that's what they got to do is make it feel like you just got to plug it in, right? And then that feeds the same misconception that all the buyers have that, like, well, let's just use AI over here. Let's just get a recommendation engine started, you know?
Yeah, we don't need a professional services company. We're just going to buy this piece of software.
We can plug it in. Yeah, plug it in.
Exactly. Yeah. So as deals start to materialize, what are professional services organizations doing that are successful at tackling this market? Well, first of all, they're recognizing the maturity of their customer base and adapting to it in how they sell. And what I mean by that is step one has always been ensuring that the customers you have, obviously you want to be selling into the C-suite, but you're not always selling into the C-suite. But it starts with education. So there's an investment in customers that needs to be made in order to get to a deal. It's not like coming in and doing a demo and then, you know, getting an order, right? There's a joint experience journey that you have to take them on.
Yep.
That's the first thing. The second thing is know your customer. Now, this is kind of, you know, sales 101, but you'd be surprised how often this is not done. So really understanding what is going on in your organization around this topic. Are there pockets in departments where they're already experimenting, right? Can you leverage that somehow? So in one case, what we did was we had a completely different topic that we were doing an engagement on. But what we noticed was that every department had, and I've shared this story with you before, every department had somebody who was like, I'm going to take a Coursera course, I'm going to spin up an AWS resource, and I'm going to be the data scientist of our department.
I'm going to build technical debt in arbitrary dark corners of the business, disconnected from aligned strategic goals or infrastructure. Yeah, exactly.
And so what we did with that customer is we recognized that they needed a way to identify that. So there was a problem that they were just beginning to be aware of. But we came to them with the solution. Based on you, how your company operates, here's how we are going to help you navigate that problem. First, we're going to understand and basically inventory those business problems that those people who are so motivated to fix these problems, what are they?
Yeah.
In many cases, once you've gotten that list together, it is a surprise to management. It highlights business issues they were previously, or even opportunities that they were previously unaware of because it just never bubbled up. The second problem that you're helping this customer solve is, by the way, Mr. or Mrs. Customer, you are writing a check that you don't even know you're writing. And it's not necessarily just the AWS instances that are, you know,
spinning up,
spinning up like tribbles everywhere, right? It is a cumulative cannibalization of initiatives that those folks ought to be working on that were approved. That number is not insignificant. I think I mentioned this on a post recently in response to something that you
wrote.
And then the other thing is, think ahead, bring specific use cases. So when I say know your customer, I mean, know what the C-suite is thinking in terms of what are their challenges. Know the customer well enough to understand what data sets do they already have. They may be completely siloed. It may be politically untouchable, right? Which is often the case. You have to, that's another cultural hurdle we have to get by. And do your homework, because that will allow you to go and find the appropriate either industry or functional use case that you can bring to them with at least a hypothesis on what the ROI would be for them. And that's when you become a partner and not a vendor.
I'm going to try to nutshell this. I want to make sure I'm getting everything from the audience. So you've listed a lot of great insights here. So a couple things that are floating to mind. You mentioned that, you know, there's a lot of this, oh, we already have it handled, even though it's not connected to business. So there's this phase of sort of, well, there's this phase where it's cropping up, maybe we don't even know about it. Then there's a phase where we kind of have it handled because we hired all these guys that have these degrees from Carnegie Mellon. And of course, they're super smart, so they got it. And then there's a phase where they've got problems, but they also have come to a realization that it's hard. And it sounds like in the big data world, they went through those phases. Obviously, we're seeing exactly the same thing in AI, these same exact kind of waves. So when they're in that phase where they sort of know it's hard, but they're getting, but they also know it's the future and they're investing in it, then you're saying they're more amenable to the services conversation. What you're also saying is, when we enter that conversation, let's enter it with a grasp of the use cases that are going to be relevant for them. And let's also serve the purpose of collecting all of the, what we call an AI, I don't know, in Emerge, we say popcorn projects, all the random stuff just ding, 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 just pinging off in different corners. Can we swirl all that together and also come with some intelligent use cases? And that when the, it sounds like the customer gets the right level of boil, which you've articulated, and then when you come with the correct, you know, front end kind of engagement where we're corralling and we're also bringing a list of value and what's relevant to the C-suite use case wise right off the bat, then we actually have a chance to build our services organization on this new technology.
That's right.
Okay.
And, but I do want to go back to something that you said. You're juxtaposing big data and AI, which by the way, I agree with. Right? But what I would tell you is, in business applications, it is more likely that the kind of data science that a business is going to be doing as they ramp up their maturity is going to be more around, you know, machine learning, RPA, NLP, you know, visual image processing. And that to me is more about, it's more of a big data play, because we're not doing deep learning yet. Okay. We're not starting with a data lake full of data and writing an algorithm and say, okay, algorithm, go find me the gold. Right. That's, we're not there yet. So one mistake that professional services organizations or practitioners, I would say advisors in this AI space make, is they may be jumping too quickly to what might be called a deep learning solution, when the client actually needs to start with a big data application that uses some machine learning. There's a natural
crawl, walk, run here. We also say, like, setting the data table, right? Do we even have harmonized information that we could even run a report on, never mind train a goddamn algorithm on? So to your point, you know, if we're going to make this ML wave, you know, we want to start with big data. Did you see something similar in the big data wave, you know, 10 years back, 8 years back, when people wanted to get into big data, but they were jumping to the end goal of big data without doing the beginnings part? Was there a similar, like, cart before the horse, leaping too far in that transition as well?
You know, it was data constrained. Okay. So there wasn't that much of a, it had to be more stepwise in the big data transition.
Almost, so it's almost more of a risk with ML that people are going to put the cart before the horse than big data. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Interesting. So people need to watch out for that, of course.
So then let's pivot to how does a professional services organization get ready for this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like how, what does my practice need to look like? Right.
Yeah.
So I'll, for example, at one time I had 150 people that were distributed across software types, right? Okay. So I had an Oracle team, an SAP team.
Yeah,
exactly. And then I had, you know, the big data team, which is where the data scientists were and, you know, later became sort of a shared service for the rest of the organization. What we had to do as we were evaluating, how do we build this competency out into a revenue generating practice? And who are the candidates? Do we go outside and hire a bunch of folks? What do the right candidates look like internally? And what I found was that the folks who had already been, I'll call it bilingual, meaning they spoke business and multidimensionality, were the easiest to pick and train on what they needed to know in order to work in AI. Now, that does not imply that they will be a PhD in data science tomorrow. But what it does do, and this is, I do the same thing with my clients, I look for those people, right? Very analytical, but incredibly deep on the business side. Because I know that I can get those individuals to a point where they are a functioning, highly contributing member of a professional services group delivering solution. So that was one thing. The second thing is, now, the question for professional services orgs is, who do I partner with, right? Is there a tool set that I land on? Am I going to try and be tools agnostic?
Yeah.
There are pros and cons to that.
Was there also, because I know there was like Cloudera and all the rest of the folks in the big data wave, was there a similar set of those same kind of discussions people had then as well, where it's like, okay, big data is going to be big. Do we want to really be knuckled down? People are asking this, of course, about Google Cloud versus Azure versus do I want to be an NVIDIA partner, whatever. Was there a corollary to this dynamic?
There absolutely is.
Okay.
So I can give you one example of an organization that is, and this is today, doing it right.
Yeah. Good point.
You know, and this is from a services standpoint, what I'm sharing is here are the phases this client is going through and understanding how to take your client and walk them through those phases, you know, is a great way to sort of embed yourself as that trusted advisor.
Yeah.
So I said, invest in education. If you can get to the C-suite, what often happens in the C-suite is you have varying levels. You have different ages, different age groups.
Yep.
Okay. So they're going to have varying levels of understanding of what is AI? What is big data? Like what value, what problems will it solve for us? And what are the costs? And what do we have to do in terms of people and reskilling of the workforce? And what does it mean for us culturally? For example, if you've got a culture where it is absolutely terrible if you fail, that's not an environment in which you can experiment and fail.
Yeah.
And as you know, you have to be able to fail in order to succeed in this space. From a services competency build, just to go back to that for a moment, you know, I was always looking for people who were bilingual in business and in technology, who I could line up with a data scientist. And now I've got the core of what I would consider a good pre-sales. Pre-sales are the folks who go in, they can very quickly assess what's happening at the customer, they'll do the research for it. And then together with the sales team, they map out a strategy. What hurts in the customer? What can we bring them that might solve that problem for them? The second thing is, and this is something I feel pretty strongly about, but I suspect we'll see for some time to come, is as a services firm, you see the opportunity to fix a very complex problem. And so you solve it with a very complex solution.
Yeah.
And then you have locked yourself into a reoccurring revenue stream because the customer will never achieve self-sufficiency.
Yeah. So you're saying the risk there is for the incentives to tilt in the direction of complexity for a services firm. And that feels like a tough tension. You know, you've worked in some giant organizations. Clearly, that, you know, by and large, I would imagine they're rather ethical places to work. But at the same time, if we can make X amount more margin and the stickiness is going to be X amount higher, if we just kind of bespoke build this thing in this kind of unique way, because they don't really know how to do it, right? It's just like when I go get my car fixed. Luckily, I have a brother that's really good with cars, but if he's not around, it's kind of whatever they say. Are you basically saying that services leaders need to avoid the temptation to take the complexity of the problem, turn it into the complexity of their solution for the sake of lock-in, or sort of where are you headed with that? Because I think this does sound like it's relevant. Okay.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I believe there's enough of a consciousness around social responsibility and ethics in business that where the right balance, finding the right balance is really important. They're going to need a lot of help in the beginning. And that's great. Those are billable hours, right? You may have product you're embedding into your customer, but finding the right balance of bringing them along and helping them to become self-sufficient very quickly over time will get you much more revenue in the long term than taking the opposite approach and literally embedding yourself for the sake of just sticking around and billing.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I imagine there's a corollary with big data there too, because it was probably just as mysterious and magical and, oh, here's all the crazy things we're going to need to do to make this work for you. And
the other area where I think it's really, really important to become a trusted advisor to a customer is in the area of infrastructure, right? And you touched upon this, like, are we going to use Google, Microsoft, like Azure, AWS, what are we using? IBM. And so there are some fundamental tenets that have not changed. If your customer is an AWS shop, then explore some of that, but at least bring them the pros and cons that relate to the problem you're trying to solve, the way you're trying to solve it, and respect the investments that they've already made in some of their infrastructure. Now, the second piece of infrastructure is you have to be upfront. This is another area where they have to be educated, right? The same way that we went through the cloud evolution, which some people are still going through, I mean, that evolution involved the thinking initially that it was an extension, it was a replacement for offshoring. So we tried offshoring, that didn't really work out very well. It was, you know, we didn't get what we wanted. It was very hard to maintain given time zone distance, et cetera. Language issues, blah, blah, blah. And then cloud was viewed as, well, we'll just put it in the cloud and it'll be our sort of off-premise data center, right? But what people were not cognizant of was that the costs, how quickly the costs would escalate. So that you, in 2, maybe 3 years, you were exceeding your original on-prem costs. And the computational needs, the storage needs, you know, the software needs to get AI right are pretty significant. So you may get a proof of concept that you're about to put into production, but when you're doing a strategy around what will our infrastructure be for AI going forward, there are growth considerations you have to really think about in terms of cost explosion.
Yeah.
That is likely to occur. And not just cost, but strategic decisioning around data. Where will the data reside? And if we put it in a data lake in a cloud, how will we ever move it? I mean, there does come a point where the expense of moving off, so another type of vendor lock-in, but I think my point is this, getting to the right conversation with your customer around all of these topics, educating them, helping them understand the realities, and then helping them with the decision-making in the context of what they do, rather than in the context of what you may have a sales rep who wants to sell them something.
Yeah, certainly lessons to bear in mind. And I'm wary of where we are in time, but I want to kind of nutshell this and make sure we're on the right page so people can walk home with what they need here. You know, you're talking about kind of from the get-go, given the way that this tech works, you know, it's not just like a Salesforce license where we pay for X number of seats, right? We're paying for instances potentially or just aggregate compute use in whatever way. Given that that's the case, come in, you know, with all the context and all the ways that we talked about kind of entering the conversation, catch the client at the right phase, which you were kind enough to talk about a little bit here as well. But bear that stuff in mind. Think about, okay, if we take this tack or this tack, this kind of area where we want to double down on AI, this type of way that we want to deal with and handle the data itself, what's really going to be the cost of that? And how do we want to factor that in decisions as opposed to just talking about capability as if there's some flat rate to run AI? Way engage things based on the realities of the expenses of this area so that that doesn't blindside you and your client and wreck your credibility. It feels like that's where you're leading us, but let me know if those are the right way to...
That's perfect.
Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Yeah. What I'd like to do is sort of wrap with two examples.
Cool.
The first example is the client, the aforementioned client who is on this journey and getting it right. They are using advisors in various places for this. So first of all, harmonizing the C-level maturity on what it is and what it could do for them organizationally. The second thing is this organization realized pretty quickly, like we've got three different clouds that are being, I mean, massive organization, right? So, you know, all of the cloud vendors are in play here. And we've got, you know, five different professional services groups, you know, doing everything from, you know, data cleansing to strategy, right? And what they're doing is sort of a grassroots approach. So the bottoms up and tops down approach. So while the executives are developing the strategy and pushing it down, they're seeding community. So they're engaging those folks that I mentioned earlier who were like, oh, I'll be the data scientist of our department. And creating conversation and encouraging that across lines of business. And, you know, propagating things that folks have been successful with. And finding other areas in the business where that same solution with minor tweaks can have an impact. And, you know, they're still sort of at the beginning of this journey. But the second point I want to make is you never know where these opportunities are going to come from. And very often, if you can find a big data opportunity, you can morph that into ultimately an AI opportunity, because what you're doing is you're taking them systematically on that journey.
Yeah. You don't have to find the ML first. You can find the data table to set so that you can actually derive value from predictive.
Here's one example. $1 billion company. I got a call from finance. Finance is not usually the group that's not the common
starting point for AI.
Exactly. And what had happened was they had grown through acquisition very quickly. So they were sitting on millions of dollars worth of contracts that were sold, but not yet delivered. I'll share with you that it's a death care company.
Okay.
So cemeteries, funerals, the whole
interesting industry. All right.
And they're publicly traded. And so what was happening was the investor community was getting smart and beginning to ask questions about the tranches of contracts and how they would be maturing into revenue. And what did they know about that? And so the request from the finance group was, could we potentially use data science to be able to answer those, so the CFO could answer those questions for the market? So very quick and dirty, analysis. It was correlation at its, at its simplest, really. We were able to show them that the forecasts they had in terms of how that revenue was going to mature out of those contracts was not correlated at all with how it was actually maturing out. And we did that by literally looking at millions of contracts versus millions of contracts historically. So that set up a whole nother conversation about, does that mean our salespeople are selling the wrong things? Right? So these exercises have natural adjacent questions that will come up that are important to the business and your ability as a professional services person to be able to navigate those dialogues to the areas where you can really make an impact will get you the sale.
Yeah, big time. The context, you have to have enough AI fluency. And to what you're saying right now, you have to have enough fluency of how to build up to. What is the roadmap? How can we convey the value in the journey, not just the magical AI we all want to be doing in 3 years and we think we can do it tomorrow, but we can't. But where's the value on the way? Super important lesson. I'm mega aware we're literally on our last minute here. So we ran right up to time, Zena. But obviously a lot to say, a lot of lessons learned from the past that I hope our listeners are going to take forward into the world of AI so we don't make the same stumbles that you saw all the services firms make 10 years ago and 8 years ago with AI all over again. So that's a very, very valuable lesson for our listeners. I appreciate you as an Emerge Plus member and as someone who now is a podcast alumni. So Zena, thanks so much for being able to join us.
Thank you, Daniel. Always a pleasure.
So that's all for this episode of the AI Consulting Podcast. A big thank you to Zena, and thank you to you for listening all the way through. If you've enjoyed what you're learning here, today we learned about the transitions of big data and how those same lessons learned are going to transfer to enterprise leadership and services firm leadership in the era of AI. If you've benefited from what you've learned here, it would mean the world to us, and if you want to support the show, to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. At least consider it. If you've benefited from the program, learned things that are going to help you in your business or help you with your clients, again, it would mean a lot to us. Not only does it help more people learn about the show, but it also helps give us good ideas about how to improve the show. The actual written reviews that we get on our podcast are some of the most important feedback for the kind of topics and the kind of guests that we're going to line up for you in the next couple months. So if you want to support the program and if you want to make the program better for yourself and for your fellow listeners around the world, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Pretty easy to find us. It's just the AI Consulting Podcast. Pretty simple to type in. You'll find it quickly and you can reach us there. That's all for today's episode. I look forward to catching you on the next episode here on the AI Consulting Podcast.